So we're working on Tima'on Le'el Chai, and Rav Kook starts off by saying that a person will find no menucha, they will find no tranquility other than in the place of God, and that all the powers within them require of them and obligate us to be godly. And so we are spirit, ruach, and the metaphor goes well because he talks about how we need to be in an avira Elohi, to be in a divine atmosphere, that should be our surroundings, that should be our environment, that should be the air we breathe, that should be the oxygen of our lives. And it's interesting to point out, I heard a point that Menucha doesn't mean that you're stationary. Menucha doesn't mean that you're not dynamic, right? Shabbat is a time for Menucha, but that doesn't mean you're not learning Torah or davening or growing, right? So this Menucha isn't that you'll become static. You'll be dynamic, but you'll grow from a place of not agitation, but a place of peace. You know, no, it's not. That's not it. You have it already, or maybe you left it here. If you left it here, that's it. All right. So that's the first thing Rav Kook says, and Rav Kook says that if a person does not live their life within the context of a godly consciousness, living a godly life, then ultimately they won't have inner peace. They will not have menucha, because all the contradictory and all the diverse powers within us will clash with each other. It's really the presence of Hashem around us and within us that takes all that diversity and apparent conflict and turns it into, you know, unity. So that was the first thing he said. The next thing he said is, okay, so that's great. So so a person will try and distract themselves, you know, it won't work. You have to, and you will only find menucha be'elohim, in God. Okay. Then his next point is that a person has this issue whereby, but everything we know about God is out of our range, you know. So in this room, there is music playing, but since we have no perception of it, so then, functionally, there is no music in this room. And so Rav Kook says that, yes, we need, this soul needs to find itself in God and feel God within itself, and yet, that's not possible. That's not possible. So he says that's why you have Talmidei Chachamim that are very tired, because what they so yearn for is functionally non-existent for them, right? So what's the answer? The answer is that Hashem comes into our world, right? And that when a person lives in Judaism where Hashem is purely transcendental, then they will live tremendously frustrated and fatigued because they're trying to leave this world, which they can't, to get to a God that functionally for them is not real. So the answer is a more, so to speak, panentheistic approach where you realize that Hashem becomes present in the world for you. And so then he goes into number three. He says we have to know the way to the palace, and the way to the palace is the gate, and the gate is the divinity in this world, and the presence of Hashem manifest in this world. All right. So we're now up to here, the highest domain. The highest domain of divinity towards which we aspire to be absorbed in it, to be included in its radiance, but which eludes our longing, descends for us into the world, and we encounter it and delight in its love and find peace in its tranquility. At times, moreover, we are privileged with a flash emanating from the higher radiance. So he said that this world is the gate. So if you get into the gate, it'll sometimes open and you'll get a revelation, an enlightenment from beyond this world, okay? But the way you get to that is through this world. So he says, at times we are privileged with a flash emanating from the higher radiance, from the higher light, which transcends all thought. The heavens open for us and we see a vision of Hashem. So that's already somewhat of a prophetic experience, but until you become aware of Hashem in this world, you'll never be able to get to the next level. So that we already discussed pretty much. So we're up to now four, right? But we know that this is only a temporary state, the flash will pass, and we will descend to dwell once again, not inside the palace, but only in the courts of God. But it's important to understand that you don't end up with nothing, right? Once you get into the gate, right, you'll have this flash. And what is this flash of God? What is this flash? A flash of what? What does it mean to have a flash of God? And you know, Mavato, it just becomes so clear to you that there's nothing but Hashem. That everything that I see is a manifestation, a reflection, an expression of Him. And there's really nothing but Him. That's the palace. The palace is a state of mind. It's not a place. It's a state of consciousness. Okay? So the gate to the palace is this world beginning to... The ability to see the presence of Hashem in this world. Sometimes the gate opens up and you get a flash of something that's even beyond this world, that includes this world, right? And when that flash passes, you find yourself in the yard. You're not outside. You're now at least in the yard, the Chatzrot Hashem. You're in the yard, okay? So you went into the gate, there's this incredible flash, but you're not thrown out, you know, completely. You are now on a different level because you've had that flash. Even if it's a memory of that flash, it keeps you in what's called the courts of Hashem. So now we're next piece. Kishatviyat ora, this is four right over here. Kishatviyat ha'ora ba ad ha'nekuda yoter gavoha. When the yearning for enlightenment, right, comes to the highest point, az matchelet hi lishov shefa or gadol, that yearning, that desire, that tviyah, that demand, right, that longing, starts drawing lishov, it starts drawing shefa or, light. Meaning you become more enlightened. Me'or haganuz, from the hidden light, sheyesh bikir ba pnim'a, that's within it, inside. What's it? Within what? Read the sentence. What is this? The tfiyah. Exactly. The tfiyat ha'ora, the yearning, the longing for the light. When it gets to, it's like when you peak with it, when you climax at this with this yearning, then the yearning itself draws a light from within it. Where is the light? In the yearning. Okay? So this is now a new dimension. Because before he was talking about experiencing or encountering Hashem in the world. Now he's talking about, right? You encounter Hashem in the world. That's a gate that opens up revelations of the, call it the supernatural, the transcendental manifestation of God. But now this is taking you to where? Where are you now finding God?
In the search.
In the search itself. In you. In your yearning. In your longing. So before it was, I meet Hashem outside of me in this world. Outside of this world. Beyond this world. But now I get to an even higher place where I'm finding the presence of Hashem in the yearning itself within the soul that yearns Hashem. So that's what he's saying. Bitoch tocha, in the very depths of the yearning, midgala la, it is revealed to her, shakol shoev or mimekom hayoter elyon, everything is drawing a light from the highest source. The flower, the sky, the beyond the sky, and the within you. the essence of yourself, are all drawing, right? That what's inside and what's outside are drawing from the same source, Hashem Echad. There's just this oneness. Kishe olamim kulam, the kol shebehem einam ki'im giluim, shem nidmim lanu, and the worlds, vishe ha'olamim, what happens is we discover that the worlds, and that the worlds, all of them, right, are nothing but giluim, they're revelation, shehem nidmim lanu, that they appear to us, ke'en nitzotzot pratiim. They seem to be particular sparks, mit galut or aliona, of the higher illumination. Aval kashem latzmam hem kulam chativa achad. But actually, they're all one. So before, I saw a glimpse of Hashem in the flower. Then I saw a glimpse of Hashem in the setting of the sun. And then I got a glimpse of Hashem in the of the song of the bird. the Ariza says that people get there's a ruach hakodesh that someone gets from hearing the flapping of the bird's wing. I don't know what he's talking about, but he says that they can hear the voice, a ruach hakodesh, a butt call coming from the flapping of the bird's wing. In other words, everything we're looking at, we think there's a bird, there's a tree, there's a sun, there's a moon. And it was already a big revelation that we started to see them as revelatory points. You know? But this is a whole other level. What are we now realizing? Well, look at what he's saying. He said, when we get to the highest level of longing, we'll discover this incredible hidden light within ourselves, and that the worlds that appear to us, right, as sparkles, flashes, sparks of the higher light, are actually what? They're all one. And everything is becoming more one-ified. Again, I don't like to use the word unified, because unified implies that there was separation and it's all coming together. When in fact we're realizing there was never separation. Where was the separation? In our minds. It was all a matter of mind. That's what it was. All a matter of mind. And so now we're beginning, you know, as if you recall, I did this last year with you, the self-aware donut. Remember that? Self-aware donut. Yes, I did that with the guys. And so we are on this journey of self-awareness, where we're becoming more aware of ourself as part of a greater self, right? There's becoming aware of himself through us, right? And there's just this complete oneness, one self, one soul, one neshama, one God. Right? There's just einod mevada, there's literally nothing but Hashem. That is the palace. You're now in the palace. When you live with this consciousness, not you hear a shir about it, or not that you can even give a shir about it, you literally live this state of mind, this level of consciousness, where nothing is separate. Before, it was one thing to see a little glimpse of Elokus in the flower, and a glimpse of Elokus in the bird. But now you're realizing those weren't separate glimpses. It's like maybe I gave you once an example. Imagine you walk into this room and there's 100 pictures, right? And I tell you that they're really 100 pictures of the same thing. How could they look so different? Well, so let's say we were to take this eraser and we take pictures of it from different angles. We take a picture of this corner. And then we take a picture of this side of it. And then we take a picture of this side of it. And then we take a picture of this side of it. And this side. This. And then we have this exhibition of all these different pictures. Somebody would walk in and think what?
They're all separate.
Right. They have nothing to do with each other. So then we say, no, they're all revelations of the grand eraser, Okay, so they start to think, okay, well, that's a spark that reveals something about the grand eraser. That's a spark that reveals something about the grand eraser. That's a level, but that's not where we're at. We have to realize they're not separate at all. They're just different aspects, you know, like a spec, spectacle. They're just a different viewpoint of oneness. And so when you look at a flower, you're looking at the entirety of Ein Sof. Yeah, all of Ein Sof is there from that angle. Right? From that angle, all of Ein Sof is in that angle. Just like if you saw my finger, that's all of David Aaron, but at that point. Right? And then you look at my toe, that isn't just a part of David Aaron, that's really all of David Aaron as he culminates at that point of himself, which is the toe. So this is an incredible high level that a person gets to, where they begin to realize, Aval kishehem latzman hem kulam chativa achat, hitgalut echad, sheba kalul kol hayofi. In every one of them is all of the beauty, kol haor, in every single one of them. Was it a spark? Everything was in there. Right? Kol haor, kol emet, kol tov. The entirety of tov was in that one little flower. Right? Because that flower was really the totality as it manifested at that point. He says, "Agiluim alelu holchim heim b'malacham u'mitalim." These revelations, they progress in their procession and elevate, ascend. Holchim u'mitbatlim leinei kol, and it becomes conspicuous. Litbalet bolet means it sticks out. Leinei kol, to the eyes of everyone, shehem be'emet hinam giluim shel kol hatov. These are revelations of the entirety of good. A very high level, right? But if you don't have a sense of where you're supposed to get to, you're never going to get there. So the point is to be able to get to a point where you see kol hatov in that chair. You see kol hatov in the person in front of you. And they're not just a spark. It was already a madrega to think they're a spark of Elikus. Right? Some people think they're nothing. They have nothing to do with Elikus. Okay? So let's get to number five. Hashefa zorem b'chol hatov. The abundance that flows in the all good. Haminase et shorash neshama el elyunoto. That lifts up the root of the soul to its supremacy, to its highest point. Right, this sefer is lifting the soul up to its highest place. Hamaktin beinei ha et haolam achomri varuchani v'kol hodav v'tifarto. Right, that light, that shefa, right, that's lifting the root of the soul is the same shefa that made your eyes go dim. Okay. It's kind of like the bat metaphor, right? What is making the bat not see the light? Why is the bat in the dark? Because of the light. It was the light, right, that was damaging his ability to see the light. So his eyes, you know, shut down. Right? We've talked about this before. A bat looking at a light will see darkness. If I intensify the light, he'll see greater darkness, I'll see greater light. But what's causing the darkness? It's the light. And so why is it that he's not seeing the light? Because his ability to get reception on the light, his klita, so to speak, is of such that it's closing him down. So remember, before, the world that we were in that felt so void of God, why was it so void of God? Right? Right? A person is in this world and they feel tired. Right? They don't see the presence of God. Why don't they see the presence of God? Because it's not here? Because of themselves. What?
Because of themselves.
Because they're not looking the right way. They don't have the right mindset. So the very light that I'm looking for, right, was the light itself that caused me this pain. But it wasn't the light that's the problem. It was my inability to receive the light. So how do I have to receive the light? Slowly. First I go into the gate, and I begin to accustom myself, regulate myself to sensing the presence of Hashem in this world, right? And then that might open up moments where I have a flash of an Einod Milvado experience, right? And I won't be left back in the same world. I'll now be in the courtyard. But that now revved up. That kind of gave me a longing. And in that longing, I start to draw more light that I find inside of myself. And I realize that all the Shefa that I've been looking for was right there all along. Right? And the darkness I was in was because of there was so much light in front of me. And I didn't know how to look at it. Right? I didn't know how to look at it. It's kind of funny. My son just said something, and it just connected in my mind. Hashem just told me to say this, right? My son, we were at Mitzpah Yericho, where my son's in yeshiva. But also Mitzpah Yericho is a wedding hall. And that's where my son Ananiel had his wedding. So we were taking a walk on Shabbat, and we were right there where all the pictures were taken. My wife said, "Remember when we were taking the pictures for Ananiel's wedding?" I said, "Oh yeah," and she says, "Yeah," and the photographer wasn't so professional because he had us all facing in the direction of the sun, so everyone was squinting. So in the pictures, you know, you have pictures of the chatan and kala kind of squinting because we were in the sun. So my wife mentioned that to Shmaya. He says, "Yeah, you know, I remember all the pictures, everybody squinting." He says. She said, because he was in the wrong angle. So I said, "No. What you need to do in order not to squint is to look at the sun with your eyes closed, right? And then when you open up your eyes, you won't squint." I don't know where this is from, but this is what he said. But it fits perfectly this, right? That you have to kind of look at the light with your eyes closed to be able to look at the light with your eyes open, right? But if you look at the light with your eyes open before you look at the light with your eyes closed, what will happen?
See.
Right. But if you close your eyes, you start to slowly regulate and accustom your eyes to the sun, enough so that you can actually not squint if you're in the direction of the sun. That's what he said. Try it. But I think that works very perfectly here. But there's a tzimtzum. Hashem reveals himself in a more diminished way in this world. And you should start looking for Hashem, before you start looking for Hashem beyond this world, start looking for Hashem in this world, right? Which will give you flashes of Hashem even beyond this world, which will then even introduce you to the presence of Hashem, not only within this world, beyond this world, within you. And you get to the Einod Mavada. You experience the Einod Mavada. So in a practical sense, what does that leave you with? It's the light of love. It's a sense of identification. It's a sense of belonging. It's a sense of feeling at one. You know, you have that flash. Right? That moment where I experienced that flash very, very strongly at my wedding. I had a moment in my wedding that is so vivid in my mind. I decided that I didn't want at my wedding the standard song that they generally sing, which is die, 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 die. I don't know, I find that sound somewhat sad and serious. So I wanted Rav Shlomo Karlbach's song, which is die, 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 which is Lecha Dodi. So I asked people to sing that. And so we start going towards the Kala. And all my friends were around me. And we were all dancing towards the Kala. And there was a moment that this is this moment. It was like, I don't know what happened, but just it was a flash. And something so powerful hit me. And I don't know what it is, but it's so clear in my head that there was this moment where it was just all beyond. It was just all beyond, you know. And so you have these moments, you know, you have these moments, but how do you accustomize yourself? How can you look at the light of the sun? You have to first see it reflected in this world. Perceive it as little sparks, right? That arouses the yearning and the yearning. But the question is, which is what we learned in Dat Elohim, is how much are you shoef to the Atzmos? We know that we can never understand the Atzmos. We can only understand Hashem as He's revealed to us in the subjective world. But how much do we yearn Hashem? And again, when you say yearn Hashem, what does that mean? It means to yearn to sense total wholeness. A seamless, unbroken wholeness. A world that is really loving and caring. A level where we are feeling this shared self with everyone and everything. So he continues to say that what happens is a shefa zorem b'chol atov haminaset shorash enishamayel hamaktin beinea et ha'olam ha'chomri v'ruchanim kol hodov v'tifarto oto ha'shefa atzmo mechadesh aleha. This very same shefa, right, which was making our eyes squint, so to speak, right, mechadesh aleha et kol ha'olamim, it gives you a whole new world. Everything's going to be wearing new clothing. Your whole world's going to look different. Right? And everything you see in life will give you happiness. Right? Just give you happiness. High level. To me, that reminds me, I mean, I don't know about you. When I see kids, I smile. I think kids are so cute.
See?
What?
See?
Yeah, it just gives you joy. There's just something about them that's so pure, so real, so who they are. There's something so authentic about those children. It's a glimpse of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I think. And every act, you know, revives your heart. Now, before you remember, he said that Talmidei Chachamim are tired. And even the best of acts doesn't do much for them. Right? Because they're not living it. They're talking about it. And even what they're talking about is a God that's transcendent. But when a person starts to shift their consciousness and begins to experience, encounter, and live this truth of Ein Od Mavado, then good deeds refreshes your heart. Right? The Kol Limud Marchiv Deya, and all the learning expands your mind because you are feeling the presence of Hashem in everything you're doing. Right? And you're not thinking of, this mitzvah will get me Olam Haba. This mitzvah is Olam Haba for me right now. Right? In fact, my sister told me, actually, someone she worked for told me a story. He went to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And when he was there, there was a multimillionaire, a very wealthy man, who asked Rav Moshe Feinstein a question. He said, I know that if I support learning Torah, then I get half of their Olam Haba. Right? So by supporting someone else's learning, I mamish get, right, half of the schuyot of their learning. So why not do that? Because I enjoy business and I'm really good at it. So I'll support people learning and I won't learn. So Moshe Feinstein says, well, that'll get you Olam Haba. What's going to give you Olam Hazeh? Great answer. Right. Because in his mind, Olam Hazeh is, I'm enjoying Olam Hazeh. I got a big house and a big car and I can go on great vacations and I can get Olam Haba, right, by paying someone to learn Torah. So I got it all. I got Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, but where's your Olam Hazeh? You think the big house is Olam Hazeh. Right? So that's what he says. We call Limud Marchiv Deya. Before, the Limud was tiring because this Limud is not getting me to God. He's in Shemayim. Right? But now, Ein Od Mavado. There's nothing but Hashem. So then he says, HaMitzarim HaSarim Shokol Eila, the narrowness of these things, Einam Dochkim Et Marchava Shel Neshama. It's no longer, remember he said before, the world became a place that was strangling you, choking you. The world was coming in on you. Now, it's a whole new world, right? When you begin to sense Hashem within the world, and you get flashes of Hashem beyond the world, which then enables you to have flashes of Hashem within you yourself, everything looks different, everything feels different. And what before was cramping you, was squashing you, now is actually refreshing, expanding, uplifting. Shehi mistakelek tekef u'miyad, right? V'ra'a shekolo tamini tzotat ha'ketanim olchim mitalim, and then suddenly they start to see that all these little sparks, this act, that learning Torah, that vort, that little tefillah, that bracha you made, that vision of that, everything, holchim u'mitagdim v'nitzarim b'tzorah chayim u'layim. Everything just starts to come together. And it's all one. Not one and the same, but it's all one. So let's hear some questions on this article or on this. Because it's about getting to a state of mind. It's getting from information to consciousness. So when it says, Shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid, I place Yudke Vavke in front of me. It's not that I sit there visualizing Yudke Vavke. No, I mean, you could do that, right? Maybe that helps. The bottom line, it's living with Einod Mavado. That's what's called Yesa Hashem Panav Eilecha, right? What does it mean, Ye'er Hashem Panav Eilecha? May Hashem reveal His face to you. What's Hashem's face? Einod Mavado. What does Einod Mavado look like? Right? That the description of quantum physicists of a world that is one, right? Or you remember we saw that video of this woman Taylor, Jill Taylor, I think was her last name, and where she talks about how she had a stroke in her left brain. You remember that? We saw last year. Worth reviewing. I get the chance to review this every year because I teach it every year, and every year it's different and expanding. And so we just saw that video with the guys last week, beginning of last week. So she lost her ability to see reality with her left brain. And what did she see? It was ecstasy. Everything was one. Everything was connected. Right? It was all love. But the problem with her is, you know, in Kabbalah, the left brain correlates to the name Elohim, and the name Elohim correlates to Tzimtzum. And the Tzimtzum is diminishing the light of Hashem, allowing for the emergence of details, right? So she no longer saw details. Everything was one. Right? But that's not what Yiddishkeit is looking for. The Shem Hashem is Yud Kei Vav Kei Elohim, where there is detail, but it's so at one with everything. Right? That's the beauty of art, you know, whereby all those different colors, the artist has this ability to have all these different shapes and colors, and yet it's all one. Right? It's all one. So, any questions about this? Like, we might not get to this after learning a piece like this. But you can't get somewhere if you don't have a sense of where you could get to. You know? You just can't. You know, there's something called psychosynthesis. It was developed by a guy who I think was a contemporary of Freud. Whereby Freud developed something that he called psychoanalysis. Well, this guy went in a different direction and developed a therapy he called psychosynthesis. And so in the practice of psychosynthesis, one of their exercises is to imagine. So in the book that I was reading, one of the exercises, they had this woman imagine bells ringing. Right? So the woman started imagining bells ringing. All right, and then one morning, she wakes up hearing bells ringing. And she says, oh my gosh, I've been practicing this exercise so much that I'm starting to hallucinate. I'm hearing bells ringing. So she tried to fall asleep, but she heard the bells ringing. And she said, are these bells ringing in my head? So she gets out of bed and she looks out her window. And just outside her window, across the street, is a church. And the bells were ringing. And she realized that those bells ring every day. But she never heard them because she never imagined it. So the basic point is that when you imagine something, that becomes a kli to be able to be makabel it in reality. Right? So if a person, if we just kind of imagine in your mind, what would this world look like? Right? if you were living with this Einod Mavado consciousness, I think that itself would make you more able to actually experience it, you know? Because the music's in the room right now. It's right here, right? Einod Mavado is right here, right? So how come we're not feeling that joy? How come we're not, well, maybe you are. How come we're not feeling that joy? How come we're not feeling that love? How come we're not feeling that incredible sense of identification, you know, with everybody on the street as we walk down? It's like everybody's my closest buddy that I grew up with, you know? It's like getting to that level. So if a person were to imagine that, you know, if a person were to imagine that, then you open yourself up, you know, to feeling that more, you know. It's like I know somebody who did a workshop for singles and had them imagine that they were going to meet somebody and that they were going to get engaged and imagine the date of their wedding. So there was a woman there that was quite old and she said, it was too painful. I can't do that. I went, why disappoint myself? And this person doing the workshop said, no, I want you to imagine. I want you to imagine that you met that guy. I want you to imagine that he asked you to marry him, right? That week she met a guy and she got married to him.
Wow.
Yeah. Because she opened herself, so, you know, so I think it's important to understand that the imagination becomes the kli. In Kabbalah, Koach HaDimyon is Malchus. The sphere of Malchus is the kli that's Mekabel. You know, we were talking, Rav Kook was talking about the subjective mind, that's Malchus. The objective reality is Tiferet. Yeah, but it's about how do you make the subjective mind receptive to the objective truth, even though it'll still be translated in a subjective language. Right? So I think when a person imagines, like to use one of the great sages, Harav Arnold Schwarzenegger, he writes in his book, how he became Mr. Universe 5 times. He describes there how he imagines his muscles getting bigger as an exercise that he does. And he imagines himself picking up the barbell before he does pick it up. And he says, and if he can't imagine it, he can't do it. He said, but when he can like get this like focus of literally seeing himself pick it up, he just goes up to it and picks it up. Right? Right? They found that people, they did an experiment with people shooting basketballs into a, you know, into the hoop. So they had people practicing, and then they had people just sit there and imagine. Just imagine the ball going into the hoop. And they found that the people who just sat there and imagined it had greater precision than the people, you know, that were practicing. So your imagination becomes the kli to be mekabel, the emes. So the more you imagine a world of love, you know. Sadly, John Lennon's song "Imagine" is not quite the image that we have. You know, imagine a world, you know, with no religion. You know, it's not hard to try. You know, nothing, no heaven, only sky. Right? Imagine no countries. But that's not what Yiddishkeit is imagining. We're imagining that the Echad includes and permeates the diversity. And where there is oneification that embraces and permeates diversification. That's Yud Kei Vav Kei Elohim. Elohim is plural, Yud Kei Vav Kei is single, so to speak. It's beyond the either or of one or many, but an uppercase oneness. So I think when a person has that, when they say the Shema, you know, and they say Echad, and they imagine, you know, the four corners of the earth, the Dalit, the four corners of the earth are filled with Echad. I think that. So that's why learning this material, even though it's very high, you know, they say that the teachings of Rabbi Nachman were for Rishayim. And that the teachings of Lubavitch were for Beinonim. Recently I heard, you know, for the in-between type of people. But I've heard that the teachings of Rav Kook is for the tzaddikim. Now again, everybody has within them the Rasha, the Beinoni, the tzaddik. So the difficulty of Rav Kook is he's shooting really high. You know, Rabbi Nachman is talking about lo litya'esh. So he's talking to people that are mityesh, right? Right? And the Tanya is talking to being, you know, what is a Beinoni's avoda? Rav Kook is talking to the tzaddik. But within us is still a tzaddik. And one could say, well, why learn this stuff when this is so out of my league, so out of my range? It's never going to get into your range if you don't even have a glimpse of it. If you don't know what could be, how are you ever going to get there? Right? If you never get a glimpse of the ultimate, you'll never yearn for it. You're never going to get there. Right? So even though it can be very frustrating to learn his material because it's so high. But I think if we understand that it's there to arouse our yearning for it, to give us a glimpse of what could be, to kind of challenge our imagination and broaden it. Anyways, that was it. We'll start something new tomorrow.
Thank you,
Rabbi. Bye.